welcome. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. This is the last opportunity for subscription or donations to Behind the Black to hear stories of the Apollo era, the heroes of Apollo, to hear stories of SpaceX, the about-to-be heroes of SpaceX, when and if. Bob, a very good evening to you. Frank Borman, born Gary, Indiana, died Billings, Montana. Who was he? What did he achieve for Apollo and the Gemini program before? Good evening to you, Bob.
Good evening, John. Frank Borman was the commander of two different important missions, crucial important missions that occurred during the space race in the 1960s. He commanded the Gemini 7 mission that proved two things, major things. One, that you could survive in weightlessness for 2 weeks. Him and Jim Lovell were basically stuck in what they described as a Volkswagen Beetle, an interior of a Volkswagen Beetle, with the doors and windows all sealed, and the steering wheel pushed to one side, so all it could do was go around in circles. And they had to stay together in that for 2 weeks. But they proved that you could live in weightlessness during that much time, which is necessary to get to the moon. That was necessary. And during that same mission, Gemini 6 rendezvoused with the Apollo 7 capsule, proving the rendezvous between two spacecraft was possible. They proved that engineering. And then, more important, he was the commander of the Apollo 8 mission to the moon with Jim Lovell and Bill Anders. And this was the very first mission in human history to go to another world. It will always be the very first mission in human history to go to another world. They went to lunar orbit on Christmas Eve, 1968. Read the first 12 verses of the Bible on Christmas Eve to probably the largest telecast ever in history at that point. And basically, as far as Frank Borman was concerned, won the space race at that point to get to the moon. And it's pretty much agreed by most people involved with it. Once we had gotten around the moon with people, it was pretty much a win. And as he said, everything else followed was frosting on a cake. Well, he passed away at 95 a few days ago. I have personal experience with Borman because I interviewed him a number of times when I was writing Genesis, the story of Apollo 8. And the thing that must be understood about Borman is he was, as I say in my essay today, an old-fashioned American of the highest order. And what that means is that to him, anyone who ever met him was always struck by his utter and total honesty, combined with a charming forthrightness. This is very old-fashioned American values. He would always tell you the exact truth as he saw it at all times. If someone contradicted him but was right, he immediately would accept that. He would not argue the point because he had a different opinion. He would always go for the truth first. And he didn't like anyone who prefabricated, but he was polite about simply ignoring you if you couldn't be honest. That's why they picked him to lead the investigation of the 1967 launch pad fire of Apollo 1 that killed Grissom, White, and Chaffee. Because they knew he would tolerate no excuses, would find out what was wrong without mercy. But he would do it without antagonizing anyone unnecessarily. He was a very charming man. He knew how to do it right. And he really represents an old-fashioned, honest American. He was working at a time also when integrity and honesty was highly valued by American culture. Nowadays, not so much. But then, if you were honest, truly honest, people would flock to you. They would want to hire you. They'd want to use you. And that's what NASA did, and he flew for in those missions. Our America's greatness is, I think, sadly reduced by Borman's passing. We can only pray that many others come forward to replace him, to follow in his honest footsteps, to make America the same America that, without hesitation, has fought against tyranny for most of its history. And as Kennedy said, to prove that free people could do it better, took humanity to the moon. Borman made that happen.
Bob, there's a story that the Apollo 8 was scheduled to go around the Earth, and they changed the mission profile to go around the moon because the Soviets were about to launch something significant. Is there anything to that story?
That story is totally true, and it's significant for a lot of reasons. Apollo 8 was originally supposed to be testing the lunar module in Earth orbit, but the lunar module was not going to be ready for a December launch. That was the first problem. So what were they going to do with Apollo 8? They could have just repeat the Apollo 7 mission, which proved the Apollo capsule could fly and keep people alive for a period long enough in space to get to and from the moon. But why repeat the same thing again? They had already done that. And then on top of it, the Soviets had sent an unmanned mission to circle the moon. And the orbital mechanics said that they had a good chance of doing the same thing again in December of 68. And so NASA, in the summer of 68, knowing it didn't have a lunar capsule, a lunar module ready to do tests for Apollo 8, made the decision to send Apollo 8 to the moon. In other words, it would test the engineering and software to get the capsule into lunar orbit and then return it to the Earth and test all those technologies. What was important about that is it did not have the lunar module. And if you, everyone remembers Apollo 13, they used the lunar module as a lifeboat. That was always the intention. No mission would leave Earth orbit without a lunar module because you needed it as a redundancy for a lifeboat. But they made the decision to go anyway to win the space race. And they did it with the expectation that there was a 50-50 chance that this mission would not fly. One of the reasons they picked Frank Borman as the commander is that his unwavering dedication to finding out what's right or wrong meant he would do whatever was necessary to make sure nothing would go wrong. And he succeeded. They did it. They went around the moon, came back, and they essentially won the space race.
To recover the drama, I recall it this way, Bob, that there's a moment when the capsule is out of communication with Earth. And during those moments, it must fire the rockets that put it on a course back to Earth. Do I remember that correctly, Bob?
In both cases, going into lunar orbit and then leaving lunar orbit, the engine on the service module had a fire, but it had a fire when the capsule was on the backside of the moon, behind the moon, which means there was no communication. These astronauts were entirely on their own. I described this in detail in Genesis, the story of Apollo 8. And so getting into lunar orbit, we did not know until they came around the moon that the firing had worked. The key is that there was no redundancy for that SPS engine on the service module. So if it didn't work, they would be stuck in lunar orbit. And so behind the moon, they went behind the moon, and everyone has to wait until they come back to see if the engine is fired and they're on their way back to Earth. And the first words they heard from Jim Lovell when they came around the Earth, the moon's horizon, and reestablished communication, and this was on Christmas Day, the words of Jim Lovell, there is a Santa Claus. Because they had gotten the engines to work, and they were on their way home.
Those were tough times in America and in the world. That was
the were tough times, but I think it was because America was tough. It was, you know, and hard, and drove hard, and made things work, and worked hard for the right thing.
I'm just recovering the Vietnam War and the Cold War, yeah. Bob, and the confrontation with the Soviets was worldwide. And NASA was seen as a victory without anybody dying, as I recall.
That's right. That's right. And Borman did not go into space as a space cadet. He didn't care about space exploration at all. What he cared about was winning the Cold War to establish freedom worldwide, as Kennedy said, to prove that a free people could do it better. That was his goal, to win the Cold War, help win the Cold War. And the Cold War, to him, represented freedom versus tyranny. And the truth of the matter is, in the Cold War, that's exactly what America stood for, freedom versus tyranny.
1968, 2023, the FCC. What, Bob? What are they up to?
We got a bunch of SpaceX stories. SpaceX wants to launch, do a second test launch from Boca Chica of its Starship Super Heavy. It's been delayed now at least 2 months because of bureaucracy and the federal government. Well, this yesterday, the FCC issued an extension on SpaceX's communications license for that launch. This is not a launch license. This is merely the FCC giving approval that SpaceX can do a launch and use its communication facilities to communicate during the launch. They extended that FCC license from December 1st through February 23rd, 24. And there was a lot of rumors in the space community that the FAA, that Fish and Wildlife, was going to issue its approval, which would allow the FAA to issue a launch license late in the day this weekend. And we'll have to see if that happens. But that SpaceX has asked for a communications extension from the FCC covering December and January and February suggests that they're covering their bets, that they know there's a good chance that that license will still not be issued for a mid-November launch.
We turn now to a story that has been lingering about a discrimination case at SpaceX. You report, Bob, that the federal judge does not look with favor upon this.
This is part of the full court lawfare press by the Biden administration, it appears to me, in the federal bureaucracy against SpaceX. Not only is the FCC been slow issuing licenses, the FAA, Fish and Wildlife have been slow issuing, they're doing investigations of Tesla. Up and down the line, they've been going after SpaceX. And one of the things the Justice Department did a few months ago was to file a lawsuit against SpaceX because it did not hire illegal aliens. And SpaceX immediately called for a dismissal because by federal law, State Department law, they can't hire illegal foreign nationals, any foreign nationals nonchalantly, because of strict State Department regulations having to do with their missile technology, basically rockets and missile. And so on one hand, they would be put in prison if they hired illegal foreign nationals. And on the other hand, the Justice Department wants to penalize them for not hiring illegal foreign nationals. That was the court suit. Well, a federal judge this week threw out that court case, calling it factually and legally insupportable. Now, of course, we don't know if the Justice Department will appeal that decision, because the Justice Department's goal here is not to win this case, but to harass SpaceX. That's merely what it is. And if in that sense it was successful, because they had to spend money on lawyers and spend money on time to try to fight the case. And so if it's just simply to harass, they will appeal the case. We'll just have to wait and see. But it's on either's face, this lawsuit was utterly idiotic, and the judge threw it out.
X-37B, the famous secret plane, now to be revealed as a success for Falcon Heavy. What have they been launching it on, Bob?
Up to now, they launched on a variety of different spacecraft. They launched rockets. They did use the Atlas V from ULA. They used SpaceX's Falcon 9. But they've now announced that the next Falcon Heavy launch, which was contracted by the military years ago, the payload's going to be an X-37B. Now, there's no X-37B in orbit right now. The Space Force has a fleet of two. The last one completed a mission that was 908 days long, which was a record. This one is going to be launched now on a Falcon Heavy, which means it can either carry heavier payloads, but more likely it can get to a much higher orbit, and therefore do testing in a much different regime in outer space. For its period of time. We don't know how long it'll be up, but that launch is now scheduled for December 7th of this year, John.
From Kennedy, yes?
From Kennedy. Yes. Right. That's the only launch pad SpaceX has that the Falcon Heavy can launch from.
Reminding me to ask, how often can SpaceX launch in 24?
SpaceX has been targeting 100 launches in 2023. It has announced that it's going to be trying to achieve 144 launches about in next year, basically one every other day. And they're going to do that. They're going to require frequent launches from both Kennedy and Vandenberg. And it's going to be a hard achievement, but they're getting close to 100 launches this year. Whether they can make it, it's going to be really close. They're going to be really close to 100 launches. If they get close to 100 launches, they will have done more launches than almost the entire world did for almost the entire history of space since Sputnik, which is pretty amazing, John.
What is Firefly?
Firefly is a new startup rocket company that went bankrupt and was brought out from the ashes to renewed itself, and it's trying to build its own rocket. It's also trying to build its lunar lander called Blue Ghost, and it has contracts with NASA and other commercial organizations to have payloads on Blue Ghost for a landing on the far side of the moon in 26. Well, they've now announced that an Australian commercial company, Fleet Space Technologies, is also going to fly a payload on that Blue Ghost lunar lander, and this will be a seismometer. All that means is that, once again, these are private companies building lunar landers for use by anyone. NASA is one of the main customers, but they have space. NASA doesn't control the lander, so the company does, so they can sell landing space, payload space to others and make money on it.
And quickly, Rocket Lab, isn't that an Australian or New Zealand company?
Rocket Lab's an American company, but it has one of its launch pads, two of its launch pads are in New Zealand. That's why people think New Zealand. But it is an American company. It has announced that it's completed its investigation on a September launch failure. It's now scheduling its next Electron launch for the end of November. More significant, the company says it now has 22 booked launches for next year. year. That's double the pace of, more than double the pace of any previous year by this company. Of those 22 launches, 20 would be to orbit, 2 would be hypersonic test flights, probably for the military, suborbital flights using their rocket. They're a very smart company. They suddenly realized that they could reconfigure their orbital rocket to not do orbital flights, but to do hypersonic flight tests. And they've already done one, two, I think, actually, and they're going to do 2 more next year.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.